Well, good morning, everybody. I was just going to sit back and relax and let him take over, but I figured Kevin had an agenda going along with that question that tied in with what we're going over. I wanted to put some things back up on the board. I don't know if you can, I'm terrible at writing on a whiteboard, but some things that I was going to go over in more detail as far as some things that I think that are very important having to do with money. One was God first. We went over that more extensively than I probably wanted to, just because there was more things to hit. And I think just in the amount of time, I'm going to have to combine some of these, which I've taken my list and kind of narrowed it down a little bit. One was God first with our money. Next was seeking, saving, and lost. And that really ties back into with God first. Tithing and giving. I'm going to combine both of those. Debt, lifestyle, working, wisdom with our money, and lending. So, everybody heard that we're going to have a class on finances, right? So what's the first thing that probably came to people's mind? It was pretty evident this morning. Yeah, we're going to talk about debt. Great. Everybody loves to talk about it, don't they? Because guess what? Almost anybody who owns a house today has debt. Unless you're older and you've had the opportunity to work on that. But there's some things I want to point out about debt this morning, and that was one of the ones I was going to talk about. That's why I said I was just going to sit back and let Larry talk. But I have some things. Let's turn to Matthew chapter 5. Matthew chapter 5, verse 25 and 26 we're going to be reading. Make friends quickly with your opponent at law while you are with him on the way, so that your opponent may not hand you over to the judge, and the judge to the officer, and you be thrown into prison. Truly I say to you, you will not come out of there until you have paid up the last cent. We don't really, in America, they don't have what they call necessarily debtor's prison. Now, you can be put in jail for being dishonest, so they call it. But we're not the ones who run the tally sticks, so we don't get the opportunity to tell what the value of things are. But what God has given us the responsibility to do is to do what He says. Right? One is to obey those who have been put in charge over us. This can be hard to do when you know that it's dishonest, what they're doing to you. I've always been one I didn't like. Things aren't fair. I don't like it. I think my nephew got a little bit of that too. No matter... Yeah, you, Caleb. I never liked it. It's not right. Something was not fair. Wait a minute, I don't think so. Well, guess what? I think there's some things that God puts in front of us to make them not fair, that we have opportunities to learn. So I'm going to go over some statistics that might bring things to light for this. Go ahead and turn over to 2 Kings chapter 4. This is having to do with the widow's oil here. We're going to start reading in verse 1. 2 Kings 4, verse 1. Now certain women of the wives of the sons of the prophets cried out to Elisha, "Your servant, my husband, is dead, and you know that your servant feared the Lord, and the creditor has come to take my two children to be his slaves." Elisha said to her, "What shall I do for you? Tell me. What do you have in the house?" And she said, "Your maidservant has nothing in the house except a jar of oil." Then he said, "Go borrow vessels at large for yourself, for all your neighbors, even empty vessels. Do not get a few. And you shall go in and shut the door behind you and your sons, and pour out into all these vessels, and you shall set aside what is full." So she went from him and shut the door behind her and her sons, and they were bringing the vessels into her, and she poured. When the vessels were full, she said to her son, "Bring to me another vessel." And he said to her, "There is not one vessel more," and the oil stopped. Then she came and told the man of God, and he said, "Go and sell the oil and pay your debt, and you and your sons can live on the rest." See, when you're in debt to somebody, was it his right to take her sons as slaves to work off the debt? You would think, that's not really. But it was, wasn't it? You were in debt to them. The creditor come to collect. Guess what? You don't have something to give. You're going to have to give something. So, one, it was his right that he died. Obviously, there's God did provide in this situation. And he does show here how he does provide. I got something for you. Do you know why? And some people may have heard this. Do you know why? Who you become a slave to when you're in debt? Anybody? The lender? Satan? Ultimately, really in today's society, people about collecting their debt, and I'm talking about the ultra-rich people who are talked about in James, you know, the rich are going to always rule over the poor. They're not necessarily concerned about the money because they don't need it. They're concerned about the control that they have. So, little joke for you here. Do you know why a slave could never get his PhD? Can't get past his master's. Yeah, I know. But ultimately, hey, the Lord has given us the opportunity to get our PhD, hasn't he? He is the one healer, and he has made us to be heirs with him, that we give people real healing that they need through his word. So, let me run some stuff. Who in here has a loan? Just any type of loan. Yeah, I do. I have a house loan. But you know what? I'm going to do some things because when I was younger, I thought that it was, I could borrow money. I've always seen people do it. They always seem to pay back. Oh, they get what they want, right? So let me flip over here. So how do you think America is doing with this? Yeah, poorly. Here's some statistics for you. In 2002, the average credit card debt per household, this is average, spreading it across America, $14,185. In 2002, let's bump it up to 2016, $16,747, your average debt on credit cards. Average debt including your house. This is people who own their house and they have credit card debt. From 2002 was $88,063. $88,000.
Now, what was that
number? $88,000 in 2002. That's including household and indebted with credit cards. So,
does that include your mortgage?
Yes, household with your mortgage. We bumped that up to 2016, $134,642. This is, you don't realize this is people who are semi-diligent with their money and have pretty big down payments, right? $134,000. So there's two kinds. Here, let me back up here. The key is for us to be able to realize it. Go ahead, Larry. I'm going to come back to you.
You know, and it's being, and this is where we have to watch the culture. Obviously, from your numbers, it's clear that it's more acceptable to be in more debt, seeing debt growing like that. And that, like you just said, you made an excellent point. That's not an accident. But we have to watch that we don't follow the culture, that we don't buy into that. Because, I got debt for this, that, or whatever it may be. It's okay to be in debt. And our government is leading the example by being, I don't know how many trillions we are in debt. But we got to watch that we don't follow culture. It's clear that culture is saying that more debt is normal. God says, no, it's not.
And this is going to go tying back into where he's talking about being in debt. This is about talking about our lifestyle too. You think people are going to realize? You know what became the norm? Started to become a trend, a norm. Well, you have everybody like, what happened? Everybody started getting what? What do the kids have now? Well, they don't have phones. iPods, right? So how many kids do you see not without an iPod? Anybody check the prices on those lately? How many kids do you see with a phone? Some of them are mandatory. I will say that if they're at a younger age. Some of them are mandatory in certain situations. I can understand that. But we've become a society, at least the world in general is starting to get that. You go over to third world countries, do they get to choose all that stuff? They don't have those opportunities, do they? They don't have those opportunities. Everybody have an iPod, everybody have a phone, do we? I'm not saying that we can't have those things. But if it's costing us in order of being in debt, then that's where we're going wrong.
It's actually kind of scary when you... In third world countries, it's scary to see the choices people make when they are so limited, even financially. Because, like what you're saying as far as culture, well, world culture, in terms of media and that kind of stuff, we see people, they choose smartphones in third world over a bed. I mean, it just tells you, like, how strong that cultural pull is.
Larry.
Yeah, it's funny. I was just talking to my kids the other day, you know, they think a cell phone is a must-have. And I was like, I don't remember the day. When I grew up, not only did you not have a cell phone, the phone was stuck to the wall, and you had to wait for the dial to actually go all the way back every time you chose a number. I mean, just dialing was quick, and now it's like we don't even know people's number. All we know is their name or speed dial. So it's crazy. But again, those of the world have built that appetite in us for that stuff.
You're right. And really, the appetite that comes is our entertainment.
Yeah. I think it's more sinister than that. I think it's how they create the currency that's the problem. Because if everybody were to pay their debt off, everybody in the United States were to pay their debt off right now, mathematically there would not be any more currency because they never create enough currency to pay the interest.
You're very right, and that is an issue that I thought about really addressing, but I'm trying to keep some things at a basic level here. But you're right. If everybody did, but what has God commanded us to do? We read it this morning, didn't we? To owe nothing to anybody but love, right? See, because we can get trapped in those situations. How many of you have ever been somewhere and went to pay for something and something was wrong? Like something happened with whatever. Like maybe something happened with your car that you didn't know. Go ahead, do it.
Well, one time I paid some traffic tickets and then I came back to get my driver's license and I said I hadn't paid the tickets. Fortunately, my mom still had the receipts.
Yeah. See, things can happen in those situations, but I can tell you this. If someone was sitting down to Bible study with me, if I met them at a restaurant and I was taking care of the coffee or the piece of pie that we had during the study and I went to pay for it, and they said, your car has been declined, I'd start rolling some wheels in my mind being like, okay, this guy is talking about truth and trying to tell me that this is real. But what's going on over here? See, the character you have, your actions have to match up with your character, basically, and that's what it boils down to. So, let's talk about when we're younger. All right, Mr. Simpson said, "Let's not." Okay, everybody needs a vehicle, right? Today's age, we pretty much all need a vehicle to get places. This isn't like we don't have a big, huge bus system here. And if you do, I've known kids that I went to school with, it takes them a bit of their day just to travel across town because of the different stops. Now, this takes some planning, right? So we're going to say we're done with high school, right? And I'm kind of talking to some of the younger kids right now. Or maybe we're not done with high school, but we need a car. Maybe we've been fortunate enough for someone to have given us a car, a grandparent or something, which is a big blessing. Maybe you aren't. Well, there's a lot of things that come along with purchasing that, right? First of all, if you're going to have any car that's going to help you back and forth, like how many of you know how to work on a car at your age? Most people don't know how to work on cars, period, because we've taken it off because our lifestyles have become so, you know, some people aren't wired that way, and that's fine. Some people, we're so busy that it actually takes up more of our time to be able to do that stuff.
And the vehicles are much more complex than they were.
So there's some of these things we have to pay attention to, right? So to get these are some basic numbers. To get a vehicle that's going to run good, isn't going to leave you stranded on the side of the road, you're going to be paying almost $7,000 for a decent vehicle. It may have some damage on it. May have some hail damage if you're talking to Mr. Bisco. Or even Mikkel for that matter. But it's going to be functional. Because if you're going to purchase something, you want it to be functional. So this is what I want to talk about as far as how the debt ends up extending out. Okay, $7,000. Say you had some money. The car was $8,500. So you had $1,500 saved, right? And you needed to borrow $7,000. Now, one, used vehicle loans, they don't give very good percentage rates on them. Today, it's becoming even more scarier, actually. So if you had 6% interest, how much interest would you think you would pay? 1 year. 6% on $7,000. Well, the guy, these salesmen are really quick at doing this stuff in their head. I'm not going to let them answer. You're close. $420. So how does this work? You're like, yeah, that isn't bad. I paid $420 for $7,000 that I get. But what happens when that gets multiplied? Because the term of the loan. Over 5 years, $2,100. So you've had to pay $8,500 for this car. So basically it becomes a $10,000 car, right? Because of the interest you have to pay. Because of its compounding. Now I want to bring it up into something in houses. This is even scarier. This is for us who are a little older. Now, there's some other factors in here too. Who controls the tally sticks?
The lenders.
The lenders, right? Who controls them? Basically, what I'm getting at is there's no safety net of saying that that's going to stay the same. Percentage rates can change right in the middle because they decide to. It usually goes by 0.25%. Even if you went by 0.5% on the $7,000 loan, let me go back to it here. $7,000 loan, you have 0.5. It makes what you owe from $2,100. It brings it up to $2,275, just with a 0.5%. See how compound interest works? Is you don't end up, you're not the one who's actually getting the favor. It's the people who are lending the money who are getting the favor.
I'm remembering what you said in the first round.
Okay.
Okay, so what you're looking at, I'm just laying this out here, but when you're looking at interest and you're looking at a rate of return from the lender's perspective, you got two dynamics working. You got the inflation factor and you got the time value of money. Now, in a normal society with an uncorruptible, lawful money, that coin is designed to show exactly what your wage was. Money is directly connected to labor. So when you're in charge of capital goods and you're trying to, in the means of capital production and trying to get a return on your money, and this is where the basis of the tithe comes from, because you didn't build it. Okay, you got the corn, you got an increase. But you personally, if you're putting 2 hours of labor in, that's where the tally stick comes in on what that's actually worth. So when you're explaining simple or compound interest, I'm hoping that you tie it with the amount of capital production behind it, because that's really what's happening in the background.
You're right, and I'm glad you bring that out. As far as... Yeah, it is complicated, and I was trying to basically keep this on a more simple level, and the more ideas that I'm trying to bring out here is what happens when we start going into debt, the implications of the long run. I mean, it's good to know what he's talking about in the background, and if anybody would like to know more, I think we could talk on a more extended level. But as far as right here in the class, I'm going to try to keep it as looking at what's end up happening, you're going to be paying out of pocket.
I thought, you know, early on, Justin, you said it really well. I mean, the ultra rich, and we're talking about the people who control the world's financiers. You know, the big boys. You know, they're not interested in the money. They're interested in the control. And so, us as Christians, you know, whether we understand the way the economic system works, particularly with a fiat currency, you know, I think Keynesian economics fame. He said that basically you can get this thing working in your favor, so not one man in a million can figure out what's going on. And you know, it's great if we as Christians can figure out what's going on behind the scenes. But I think what you're emphasizing, the bottom line is, hey, how do we follow scriptural principles to keep Satan from having one more set of chains on us? And so, you know, I think the purpose that you have for this class is that basic level. Hey guys, here's some scriptural principles to keep at a very surface level in your life to keep people from being able to control you. And if, you know, that's the scope of this class, which I think is great. But you did say, you know, that ultimately it's about control. And you're right, on a large picture sense, you know, but for the day-to-day living activities as a Christian, hey, what's it take to be able to be free from that love of money? What's it take to be free from serving two masters? And so I appreciate what you're doing here for that.
Right. And really, it's going to tie in with what Mr. Wilson's saying here. It's going to boil down to what are we, you know, you're not going to be happy, really. You can't buy happiness. People say, well, you can't do that. Well, I can sure be comforted, can't I? It's just a false bottom is what it is. I could go to Nolan first and I'll come back to you guys. He had his hand up.
I really appreciate the information. You know, some of those numbers are staggering, the credit card debt and the amount of money you pay on a car loan, on a $7,000 loan. It can bury you. And I think another side that, you know, like, you know, Mr. Wilson called it the chains, it can do is the way they structure these things too. And so the problem we're running into chasing this culture is the new car smell, but then it wears off. Or we get a house and we've lived in it and now we need a bigger one. And so then we move. And the problem is they took the 7%, but you paid that on the front end. And so if your payment's $1,000, $999 of it went to interest. And so you paid off a dollar. And then you sold your house, and you just lost money. And that's why people, even if they have a kind of somewhat educated understanding of what's going on, can still just be drowning and feel like they're being pulled down the chains because, I mean, the way they have these things structured, you're set up to fail.
Right. Yeah. All right. Go up to Larry and then back to Mike.
And that is so key. They know all this. If you go to a car lot, they do not want you to leave because your brain... it says, I have to have it now. If you leave and actually think about it overnight, the common sense side of you kicks in and says, this is nuts. Why am I doing this? But if they can get you to work off of emotions, to purchase things off of emotions, that's the worst possible way to make a decision on a car, a house, or whatever it may be. But they work on that. And then that emotion, that it feels good because you have that new car, but that or whatever it may be. But that goes away. It will not stick there. And usually it's about 6 months, and that's when you think you need a newer car, just like Nolan said. And this is a vicious cycle in people. They're trying to fill that hole with something physical, and it doesn't work, but they can't figure it out. And they wonder why their debt keeps going up, and they're still not happy. And it's a ploy by Satan.
I should have went first.
He said everything I wanted to say. What I'll add to that is this is really a plan devised by Satan. He truly is. And he doesn't have to get real clever, doesn't have to be, covert, so to speak. He can just put it out there. And because of our emotions, because we're driven by those desires to have things, especially vehicles in America, it'll take people out. And it's been said just because that's where the control is. But one thing I wanted to bring out also is that even with a home or even a vehicle, those loans typically are set up with payments that will eventually pay it off. Even though at the end of it you've paid a lot more money and you've been under the control of those that lent the money, the real danger, and Satan's turboed fiery arrow, if you will, is credit card debt. Because there is no plan. The only plan that they have instilled in that is your minimum payment, and guess what? If you only pay that minimum payment, you'll never pay the balance.
And I do have some information I was going to share on that, too, going home. I got a lot of other hands here. Let me see. I got two more questions, and then I got to get back on track here.
Maybe we ought to follow Jesus' example and overturn their tables and make twitches and go after the money changers. How's that sound?
Well, I don't know if that's a hill I would like to die on, but I understand where you're coming from.
week and a half ago, I was going to go to my daughter's wedding in New York, and for months I had a reservation for this vehicle, and on the day I was leaving, because I don't have a credit card, I haven't had a credit card since the 1900s, but I had the cash, all the cash they needed. I had all the cash. They would not accept any of my paperwork. They didn't want my cash. They wanted a credit card. And so I had to go beg a brother to help me out. Well, I didn't have to beg him. But anyways, they wouldn't accept the cash.
Right.
They wanted a credit card.
You're right. And society has gone to a point where you can't even rent a car without two credit cards. Really, you can't. Mr. Simpson.
First of all, do you feel like you've lost control of the class yet?
I understand how you feel now.
I do have one comment. Other than that, it's always fun to get guys up to teach and watch them have fun. Anyway, it is a Mike Wodosewski made mention. It is part of the devil's plan. Anything that the devil can do that holds you captive to his will, and that includes you become the debtor to the lender, it's going to address a lot of things you've got on the board there. If you've got all this debt, you can't ultimately you won't be able to seek God first because you're going to have to take care of that debt. You won't be able to seek the loss because you got to work maybe two or three jobs to pay for your debt if you're an honorable person. You won't be able to give or tithe because of that debt. Your lifestyle, let's call it your death style, will be impacted. Working, wisdom, I mean, it's all addressed by the fact that if we do not handle our money appropriately, and that's why I said let's not go back to when we were young because I didn't do so great. I paid all my debt, but I made a lot of bad decisions with it. So this is everyday application for the Christian to understand that this class that you are putting together and presenting for our benefit has tremendous benefits in the intermediate and long term. So I appreciate that you're doing it, and I think everybody should understand how we handle our money and debt has a tremendous impact on how we can work within the kingdom of God.
You're right, and I do appreciate these comments because these all do tie together. And what I'm trying to bring out is like, okay, some of us might be in debt. I want to bring out the dangers of that, which ties into everything, but how do you get out of that if you are? Some people don't know where to start, do they? So they were talking about house loans. I'm going to go over that real quick just with the house loans. So how many times do you think you would buy a house if you lived in it? You paid the full term. You put out a 30-year loan is an average length of the loan on a house, right? Yeah, three times. You will. So $175,000 isn't going to buy you a real great house these days, even in Billings. It's not. So you pay $175,000. You pay $34,999 in interest every 5 years. $34,000 in interest. You expand that over 30 years, you spent $204,000 in interest. Plus the 175, that's $379,000 you paid for a $175,000 house. Yeah. Why do you think the mortgage business is like it is?
And if you don't have, I think it's 25% down, you're playing PMI, which also jacks it up some more. I mean, they got hid stuff all over the place. And yeah, we'll sell it to you for 5% down, and yeah, that PMI is insane.
Yeah, and what he's talking about in the PMI is they've actually changed some of that. It's actually gotten worse. Now you have to carry it the full length of the term. Used to be whether it's if you have it, if you get 20% paid down, you can take that off. Now the loans are requiring you to carry that the full term. So it's getting ugly. So let's get into some of the stuff about credit cards, huh? This is the part that... Go ahead, sorry.
So what's your suggestion with home owning then? So you say we should rent instead?
You know, there's I've heard both sides on this. I'm actually in the part of home owning. You do get write-offs from your taxes. I think that's going to be a personal preference that you're going to have to. Is this something that I'm going to bow? Yeah, there's issues of us being able to raise our families in our own homes. There's issues of being able to discipline our kids in our own homes, the way God has set things forth. And I think some of those benefits, I'd rather have my kids' eternity taken care of because I'm allowed to raise them up in the discipline and instruction of the Lord than to deal with state issues and have them taken away because I'm disciplining my kids. Sorry, go ahead, Larry.
The only thing I'll say about home ownership is it is the only debt that I know of that has historically the asset always appreciated. Land has always appreciated. Your house or your car, as soon as you buy it, especially new ones, it's insane. But a house historically will appreciate, and so you can look at it as an investment. What I would like to do for my kids is to pay off my house, and then maybe I can, you know, split it up, and they have a good nest egg for that we can pass on. So maybe those of us who came from the world, we can leave our kids with something so they can be out of debt quicker than we were and don't have to start at ground zero. So that is something to consider.
Yes.
If you're renting, you gotta understand when you're renting,
think we're back on here. Thanks. Okay, so there's two kinds of people who have credit cards, right? Those who have credit cards and take advantage of that and pay them off every month. Because what? They get kickbacks from them, right? Why not get kickbacks for something? But I can tell you this. If you do not live on a budget or you are not disciplined enough with your finances, do not do that. Because you haven't built up enough discipline to be able to carry that through. Then there's the revolvers. And this is what Larry was talking about. Those who pay, well, guess what? They get stuck paying the minimum on it, and it'll never get paid off. And it goes as a cycle. You'll never end up being paying that off. This is, I had another sheet in here I got to find. So it was March of 2016. Outstanding revolving debt in the United States on credit cards. $952 billion. On credit cards. That's a lot of money.
The interest
is crazy. Because guess what? You default on something, say it's a good percentage. And they talk about good percentage on credit cards. None of them are really that great at all. Guess what? It gets jacked up. Some of the highest percentage credit cards that they have gets jacked up beyond 30%. 30%. Now, we were talking in the simple terms of like 6% on a used car, right? Or 4% on a house. Take something at 30%. Do you ever think you're going to get that paid off? This goes back to college, too. College loans are terrible. Because, one, they tell you you're going to get a great job because you went to college. That's not a guarantee. And guess what? People who end up going to college, at least a lot of people who end up going to Bozeman, they love the town of Bozeman, right? Guess what? They can't stay in the town of Bozeman and make money. If you've gone for an engineering degree, you're going to have to go somewhere else.
I remember Albert Einstein had a quote on compounding interest, and I thought it was interesting. He said, was he going to take that for me?
No, okay. Go ahead.
He said, compound interest is the eighth wonder of the world. He who understands it earns it. He who doesn't pays it.
Yeah. It's very true. Very true. You know, people deal smart with their money. And, you know, we spend money on a lot of things to get things done, right? This is the tool, one of the tools that God has given us. So, therefore, sometimes we're afraid, like, and I talked about this kind of last week, we're afraid to use it because we're afraid we're going to lose it. But don't we have to be creative in the way that we use it? We have to have knowledge of it to be able to use it. Now, there's people in here that are even sitting in this class, and I don't feel like I should even be talking to them because I feel like they've done really well and they understand what's going on. There is a portion of being in debt that they're talking to as far as what you're going to keep struggling with. Do we seek wise counsel? This is talking about wisdom. Do we seek those that have gone on before us, or maybe have had a good deal of success in dealing with things?
A large part of this that we're, you know, if you get it to a basic principle or basic level, I guess, in terms of finances, and you've mentioned a few of them, is what's your focus? What's important in your life? Because that's really at the root of debt, having debt. And the other part of that is you can have all the great intentions in the world, but if you don't have a plan, you're just blowing smoke. So you gotta have a plan, and more importantly, you have to change your focus. What
what's important to you, because that really is going to determine if you get into debt continually, I think is what you're getting at. There's occasions that you might have to do something, but that's not the issue. The issue is the ongoing problem, and that's the heart.
Right. It really is. I mean, where our heart's going to be is going to determine what decisions we end up making with it. And being able to seek wise counsel. I can tell you that I was talking about before, seeking wise counsel. Do you think that God is in his local assemblies around the world has put people there as far as being able to handle the overall where our tithes come from? Do you think it's just by random chance? Well, that'd be the same logic of thinking that we would just evolve out of random chance, wouldn't it? If you're really going to boil it down to. So, I've got 5 minutes to go through. I'm trying to decide on where I can leave this, because I actually wanted to get through the debt part, and this is just barely really skimming it as far as Mr. Taylor was going into as far as the in-depth part of knowing intricately. This takes a bit of our digging into it to be able to learn it. Excuse me, I gotta get a drink here. So how is this going to tie back into what we borrow? Do we need to borrow? That's the question. Yeah, we do. Some cases, don't we? To get things done, we need to also be an example to the world. But we can't be an example to the world if we don't know, first of all, where God is first, because it's very easy to get tied up into saying, well, this is my position in the assembly. This is my position to be able to be a financial supporter, right? Does that sometimes give us an excuse of saying, well, since I'm a financial supporter, I don't have to really talk to too many people? Matthew 28 hasn't changed as far as I can see. And he didn't just say it to the he didn't say the financial supporters. He didn't say the evangelist's job is to seek and save, right? Because we can't get this done without a team. These are some of the things that happen within us being able to work together as a team. Our financials all together. You'd be so surprised if we were to put all those together. If all of us were exactly doing what we could, we'd be surprised at what we could get done. Because in war, you don't hold things back, do you? You hold things back, people die. So this being able to assess where we're at and be able to, one, to move forward from that. I'd like to be able to get into next week some of the intricacies of being able to be on a budget. Some people have never seen one. They weren't raised around one. I really wasn't raised around one, I can tell you that. I said, I know that my mom did a great job of being able to balance things here and there. Another part is the teamwork that we have with one another. How about our marriage with our spouse? I can tell you right now that my finances would not be in as good as order if I did not have Jennifer. Because she's very good at finding details. I'm pretty good at seeing an overall picture and which direction we need to have. But guess what? She has the checkbook most of the time. You know why? Because I don't go buy the groceries. I don't buy the everyday things we need in the house. So if we're not on the same page, guess what? She's going to be spending money here, I'm going to be spending money there, and then we're going to be like, how do we get in this position? Right? So for those of you who are married, those of you who aren't married, if you're single, like, keeping track of things, you just have yourself to worry about, honestly. But if you can work together with a team and a partner, then it actually becomes awesome to be able to work with somebody on a day-to-day basis. And why can't we all work together like that? Is basically where I'm going to try to go with this. I basically come to 10 o'clock, and there's other things that I want to address, and I apologize if my blood sugars are getting low, my brain's kind of getting scattered here. So I'm going to leave you with that. I wanted to get the debt part out of the way, because it can get discouraging. You feel like, how are we supposed to do this? They've set it up to where we can't win. Stick to God's principles. We will win. So I'm going to leave you with that. Thank you for your attention.